Hare Krishna. Last night we spoke about how one insignificant living entity was picked up by Srila Prabhupada. And because I wanted to complete certain topics last night, I had to skip over some incidents that took place. But tonight I would like to remember some of those other incidents as well, because they are very instructive. So, as I mentioned, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, Srila Prabhupada would speak in the temple. And Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, he would speak outside, usually at a university, but sometimes in other places. So one of the next programs was at the International Students Association. And there, Srila Prabhupada gave a beautiful example why there is not peace, why there is always conflict. He said that when a baby is born, the baby thinks only of himself. But as his or her consciousness develops, he thinks of others more. If you give a baby something to eat, he'll just put it in his mouth. But when his consciousness expands a little, he thinks of sharing it with his mother or father, and then further expanded with his brothers and sisters, and further expanded with his friends. Then, as he matures, with his community members, and he may think of sharing with all of the people in his country. And eventually he might think of sharing with every human being. But Srila Prabhupada made the point that even if we come to the point of wanting to serve all of humankind, still it's not complete. Because what about the animals? What about the plants? They're also living entities. So he gave the example that if you drop a pebble in a pond of water, so many concentric circles will expand from that one point. When we're in the bodily conception of life, that central point begins with the body. Then, you know, my mother, my father, my brothers and sisters, my friends, my community members, my nation, even my species. So I drop a petal with me as the center. Someone else drops a petal somewhere else with him as the center. And someone else drops a pebble somewhere else with him as the center. Those waves that are expanding overlap and conflict with each other. My service to my family conflicts with your service to your family. My service to my community conflicts with your service to your community. My service to my nation conflicts with your service to your nation. And even my efforts to serve humanity may come in conflict with efforts to serve the animals or protect the animals, serve the plants or protect the environment. And Srila Prabhupada said, the only way that there will be an end to conflict is if all the pebbles are dropped in the same central point. Then there will be no overlapping or conflicting. And that central point, so this is a beautiful example and a beautiful philosophy. That's what I experienced at the time. But now, so many years later, I have the same thoughts, but I have a further realization, which is that Srila Prabhupada exemplified what he taught us. He actually was concerned with every living entity. And because he kept the central point as Krishna, and because every living entity is part and parcel of Krishna, his care for Krishna included caring for every living entity. And we're seeing the result of his care for every living entity right here. Now I'm going to tell a little story from much later in my life, which is not meant to say anything about Kazakhstan or Uzbekistan or anything. It's more about my own ignorance, but even more than that, it's about Srila Prabhupada's mercy. So one year after having served Srila Prabhupada in India for many years, I went to visit my mother and father in Chicago. And it was a little awkward because we didn't have that much to talk about. I wasn't that interested in the stock market, and my father wasn't that interested in Krishna consciousness. But, you know, I'd come all the way from India, and we had to spend some time together. So we thought that we'll watch something on the educational television network. And the program happened to be about a professor in America whose life's ambition was to visit Uzbekistan. And in those days, it appears that there was no airport there. So the program showed how, you know, after, you know, towards the end of his career as a professor, he got a car and he was going overland to Uzbekistan. And he even put personalized license plates on his car that said Tashkent. And I don't remember all the details, but it was quite a moving story about how, you know, after his retirement, he was traveling over land, and then he got very ill. Maybe he had cancer or some fatal illness, and I don't even remember if he made it. But I remember thinking, Uzbekistan, I never even heard of that place. Tashkent, what is that? So I guess it's pretty ignorant. And that was it. That was it for Central Asia. Then I read on the, I guess it was maybe in Diary of a Traveling Preacher by Indra Dumiswamy, that, you know, he had come to Kazakhstan and spent some time with Govinda Maharaj, and they were preaching to Muslims, and the Muslims were actually responding and coming forward and wanting to become Krishna conscious and support the mission. I was very inspired, very intrigued. And then I thought, Kazakhstan, I wonder where that is. So this little story is meant to you know, explain how ignorant I am, but more than that, how merciful Srila Prabhupada was and is, that he has inspired his disciples to go all over the world to bring the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Krishna consciousness. And because the central point is Krishna, we all have a natural relationship with each other. I saw many of you for the first time last night, but there is an immediate bond on the basis of Srila Prabhupada and Krishna consciousness. When I first arrived at the airport, I was struck by how friendly everyone is. Of course, I had a VIP reception, so I guess they're supposed to be friendly and helpful and courteous. But I was thinking, and you know, sort of from different ethnic backgrounds, some seemed more like more oriental features, some had more. And I thought, and you know, outside the VIP lounge, it was all devotees. And I thought, boy, the people here are really nice. They come from all different kinds of backgrounds, but they're all so nice. So with that mood, I went for my walk yesterday. And, I wouldn't say we were lost, but I would say we didn't know where we were going. And, you know, wanted to approach a few people to try to get some help. They weren't all that friendly. So then I thought, it's not that the people are friendly and helpful, but it's the people plus Krishna consciousness that makes them friendly and helpful. But before Srila Prabhupada's disciples came here, who was Krishna conscious here? We're more or less the same as all the other people. But Srila Prabhupada saw that everyone has the potential to become Krishna conscious. Therefore, he went all over the world as far as he could, and he inspired his disciples to go everywhere. And now they're in Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, and people are becoming devotees. In fact, Srila Prabhupada said there are devotees everywhere. We just have to find them. So that was the example that Srila Prabhupada gave in that talk at the International Students Association. And now I'm thinking and seeing how Srila Prabhupada exemplified what he said and how what he said is coming true. Right here. So many people from so many different places and cultures living in harmony with Krishna as the central point. Then after the lecture, an Indian man saying, sort of paraphrasing his understanding of the verse, Yeyatam mam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamya, saying that everyone follows Krishna's path, and then he added to that, and in the end everyone will go to Krishna. He was trying to say that we don't have to really accept any teachings, because whatever we do, we'll ultimately go to Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada said no. If everyone was going to Krishna anyway, what was the need for Krishna to speak the Bhagavad Gita? It requires teaching and learning and following. So, like that, every night there was some program. But one night something very special happened by Srila Prabhupada's mercy. We went for a program to, I believe, Boston College, but it might have been Northeastern. There was a, you know, medium-sized classroom, and Srila Prabhupada was sitting at the front on a dais, and there was an open space. And then there were chairs on which the students and some of the faculty were sitting. And after the talk and questions and answers, there was kirtan. And again, the devotees would dance in a circle in front of Srila Prabhupada. So as we were chanting and dancing, I started feeling an overwhelming sense of love for everyone in that room. As I was dancing in the circle, I would look at the people in the room and I would just feel so much love for them. And then that feeling of love went beyond the walls of the university. I just felt a sense of love for everyone outside in the neighborhood, in the whole area. And then it spread even further across the United States, across the Pacific Ocean, throughout the universe. Yep. And I felt a great sense of oneness with everyone. But still, of course, we were all individuals. And I was so overwhelmed by this experience that after the kirtan, I went up to Srila Prabhupada. And other than raising my hand and asking questions, I'd never really approached Srila Prabhupada. But I was so overwhelmed, I just went up to him. And as I got close to him, I felt I was entering a spiritual aura, some special energy field that was coming from him. And I just came very close to him. And I said, well, in those days, we called him Swamiji. He says, Swamiji, this chanting is wonderful. And he looked towards me, and his face broke into this huge smile. It was just like an ocean. And he began chuckling. He wasn't making much sound, but his whole chest was heaving like, and I knew he wasn't laughing at me. I knew he was chuckling in ecstasy. And he just looked at me and smiled. He's like beaming. And he said simply, thank you very much. So this, I think this is one of the greatest gifts that Srila Prabhupada gave us is the holy name. And then I started chanting japa. And one night in the basement of the storefront, I had another experience. There's a beautiful picture of Krishna standing in the moonlight. It's called Murli Manohar, S.S. Bridge Basi. It's one of Burijan Prabhu's favorite pictures, and it's on the cover of Approaching His Lotus Feet. Unveiling. If you know that book. So I had heard that we should begin our meditation on the Lord from the lotus feet. But not even from the lotus feet, but from the toes of the lotus feet. And I thought, well, it should be the tips of the lotus toes. So I was sitting there chanting japa, looking at like the tip of one of Krishna's toes, right where the toenail ends. And I really don't know what was going on, but that little molecule of Krishna's lotus foot was extremely fascinating. I just kept looking at the tip of his lotus toe, and I don't know, it was just endlessly fascinating. It was like there were worlds of experience in that little molecule of his lotus toenail. I was like chanting and looking at that little molecule. And then I thought, at this rate, it's going to take, I don't even know when I'm going to get past the toenail. But I figured, well, let's just keep doing it and not worry about it. There's great potency in the holy name. Of course, I also had other ideas from before I joined, being influenced by the hippie culture and the psychedelic scene. So the first night at the temple, when I concluded everything about Krishna consciousness was perfect, one thing I saw was that they had a Hare Krishna Maha Mantra sign. And the letters were in English, but they had a little sort of Sanskrit type of appearance. And the letters were dissolving. It's like they would unform, and then they would reform. And I thought, wow, this is really special. This is really powerful. So like that, I was having some experiences on the side. And then, one day when we were taking prasad, one of the devotees mentioned how another devotee had told Srila Prabhupada that when he chanted Hare Krishna, he saw different colored lights. But then the devotee said that Prabhupada had replied, "Don't worry, keep chanting and it will go away." So then I thought, oh well, yeah, maybe this isn't really the goal. So, and you know, eventually that time came when Srila Prabhupada left. And that evening, or afternoon, the devotees gathered together to take prasad. Yeah. And there were a lot of devotees, because when Prabhupada was there, devotees came from other places, Montreal, New York, a lot of devotees. And one devotee came with a glass jar with dal in it and said that the dal was Srila Prabhupada's remnants. And like everyone became completely enlivened and excited. They wanted some of that maha maha prasad. So as the devotee was going down the rows of eaters, she came to me. And she said that from the material point of view, this dal has gone off. But if you want, you can try some. So I saw how everyone else was experiencing it. So I thought, all right, I'll try. So she gave me some of the dal. And when I put it in my mouth, the first sensation was, ooh, it's gone off, it's spoiled. But then after a moment or two, I went past that sensation and I experienced this most sublime nectar. I can't even explain what I experienced. I had never tasted such nectar. So we were trained in the university to be like scientific and to make observations and, you know, come to conclusions independently. So we were sort of like testing all these different items of Krishna consciousness to see what was the experience. And the experiences were extraordinary. Another thing I noticed after Srila Prabhupada left, because I started to spend more time with the devotees, is that they would offer the food to the deities, Radha Krishna, and then they would distribute the food from the deity's plate as Mahaprasad. And even though the food was the same, it came from the same pot as the rest of the food that the devotees were eating, but the food that came from the deity's plate tasted different, tasted a little sweeter. So one day when we were all taking prasad together, one devotee said to Satsvarupa, who was the temple president, you know, the prasad that comes from the deity's plate, it tastes like it's had sugar sprinkled over it. Did you ever notice that? He said, yeah, I noticed the same thing. So then I thought it wasn't just my mind or my imagination, but it was real. So Krishna consciousness can be experienced. And many devotees have commented that when they first joined, they had more extraordinary experiences than later. So the question is, why? Why did we have those experiences when we first joined? And why not so much now? But one answer is that when a devotee first comes to Krishna consciousness, Krishna gives him special mercy. So he knows what Krishna consciousness really is. And that encourages him to continue. There is an incident described in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in which Narada, in his meditation, sees the Lord in his heart, and he's overwhelmed with ecstasy. And then the next day, he sits down and he thinks, I'm going to do the exact same thing, and again the Lord will appear. But he did everything the same, but still the Lord didn't appear. So he became very anxious. Why is the Lord not appearing? And then he heard the voice of the Lord. And the Lord said, I regret that you will not see me again, because you are not mature in your devotional service. And then Narada Muni was filled with feelings of separation from the Lord. Feelings of separation from the Lord gave great impetus to him in his devotional practices. So the Lord does give special mercy in the beginning. But another thing is that in the beginning, we pretty much are offenseless. I know when I joined, I thought that everyone in the temple was a pure devotee. And I spoke to other devotees of my generation, they said the same thing. But then after a while, we start to see their human tendencies. And then we think, oh, well, they're not pure devotees. And then we see, oh, there's that one has that fault, and that one has that fault, and this one has this fault. And in a subtle way, we begin to commit offenses. And because we commit offenses, we don't get the same experience from chanting the holy name and engaging in the other practices. But there is hope that after the stage of becoming aware of the devotee's weaknesses, there's another stage where you're aware that on the human level, they may have human tendencies. But their real essence, their internal nature is their pure devotees. What's really prominent in their hearts is their desire to serve Guru and Krishna. And when we see them in their true spiritual essences and appreciate them as devotees, then we don't commit offenses. And we can relish the practices of Krishna consciousness the way we did in the beginning when we first joined. I'll just have to give the example of His Holiness Bhakti Bringa Govinda Swami Maharaj. Before coming here, I spent 5 or 6 days in Vrindavan. And while I was there, I met many nice devotees. And they had always been nice, but I just hadn't realized how nice they were before. So one after the other, I was mentioning them to Govinda Maharaj. And in every case, Govinda Maharaj said what a nice devotee that person was. And he started to glorify each devotee. And I thought, wow. he knows how nice they are. His vision isn't clouded or contaminated. And I was thinking, boy, it would be so nice to see everyone like that all the time. So that's one of the reasons I like to be with Govinda Maharaj all the time, because he sees the spiritual essence of everyone. So now I'm feeling like when I first joined, I'm seeing everyone as a pure devotee. But I think you probably are pure devotees. Or by associating with these... Oh my gosh, I didn't know you were back. No, I was wondering why I was suddenly speaking about pure devotees. Yeah, well... So that's the effect of the association with pure devotees. Your consciousness is elevated, and you see the other devotees in their true spiritual essence as devotees of Krishna. And in the association of advanced devotees, all the practices of Krishna consciousness are heightened. They become vivid. They come to life. When Govinda Maharaj took me close to the deities before the class, I was seeing things on the altar that I didn't see before. I mean, the deities were just so gorgeous, especially Giri Govardhan. I never saw such a beautiful Giri Govardhan. And Vrinda Devi, she's also beautiful. And so merciful. And so merciful. And I actually could feel that she was merciful to all living entities. And Nrisingadev and Varahadev, so powerful. Govinda Maharaj said he believes that the reason we're here on this land now still is because of them. So Govinda Maharaj has a very personal relationship with the deities. And coming close to him, we also see the deities are alive, they're persons. And of course he has very personal relationships with all the devotees. So this type of association gives us this... the heightened experience of Krishna consciousness. And there was another incident with Govinda Maharaj. I hope I'm not embarrassing him too much. Sorry?
I said I'm so proud, it's hard to do.
But the specific reason I was in Vrindavan was to open a hospice for devotees. A hospice is a place where people who have terminal illnesses can come and spend their last days or weeks or months. And the hospice staff, the doctors, the nurses, the volunteers, they help the person to have the best quality of life that the person can have. But the patient and the hospice staff are in the mood that the illness will ultimately lead to death. Suppose the person has cancer. They're not trying to cure the cancer in the hopes that the patient will live. Of course, in the beginning, we always do try. But there may come a stage where we realize we're not able to beat the cancer. So we accept that in due course, we will leave our bodies from the cancer. But still, we want the patient to have the best quality of life. So the patient may take some treatment to, reduce the tumor, just so that the patient can be more comfortable. The cancer has already spread. We can't stop the spread of the cancer. But we can reduce the size of the tumor so that the patient can breathe easier, swallow easier, speak easier, whatever it is. And ultimately, we want to help the patient think of Krishna at the time of death. So for devotees, quality of life really means being able to chant and hear about Krishna, remember Krishna, and have loving exchanges with friends and family, especially devotee friends. So the idea of this hospice came from a lady named Archavigraha Devi Dasi. And it just so happened that Mother Archavigraha built, bought some land and built a house in Vrindavan that ended up being right next to the plot that Shivaram Swami bought, where he built a house where he and Govinda Maharaj stayed. So Mother Archavigraha built the house when she was healthy, but soon thereafter she discovered that she had cancer. And so she settled up her affairs in Johannesburg and moved to Vrindavan. And Govinda Maharaj would take care, such good care of her as her next door neighbor. He would bring his Giriraj Shila after he did his puja. Sometimes he would bring his Gaur-Nitai deities after he worshipped them. Actually, I could write a whole book about Govinda Maharaj's service to Mother Archavigraha. But he took such good care of her. And not only of her, but of the devotees who were staying with her and caring for her. It was a very intense experience to take care of a dying person. So he took care of them also. And in his own way, he took care of me by coming out every morning and saying, Bol Giriraj Maharaj Ki Jai. Keeping me in good spirits, like he keeps everyone in good spirits, except some of the local politicians. But one day, if they're fortunate enough, they will also realize his greatness. So there's so many pastimes, if you will, that took place then. But I was leading up to a specific point. Oh yeah, but I should mention that. So Mother Archavigraha, she loved Vrindavan. And right next to her house is like a little goshala that some sadhu has. And, you know, she could look out her window and see the cows and hear the cows mooing. And that particular area had trees, and it was like a sanctuary for birds. And every morning and evening, the trees would be full of peacocks singing their peacock songs. And there were a lot of green parrots everywhere singing their songs. And, of course, the monkeys. But as Srila Prabhupada writes in one purport, one might think that the monkeys in Vrindavan are envious, but actually they're not. So Mother Archavigraha had the desire that other devotees should have the same opportunity that she had to spend her last days in Vrindavan and leave her body in Vrindavan. And that there she didn't use the word hospice. I actually wasn't familiar with the word hospice before then. But she used the phrase, back to Godhead clinic. And Govinda Maharaj and I, you know, we took her request very seriously. And we made plans to fulfill her desire. But as Maharaj mentioned last night, he ended up on the other side of the Himalayas, and I ended up on the other side of the ocean. But still, we kept up the effort, and last week, the hospice opened. After it opened, again, so many things became apparent that were not seen before. I won't go into all of them, but one thing that has come to mind is that the parents of devotees who have some sympathy for Krishna consciousness can go there. Yesterday I got a letter from our god sister Divi Shakti saying that her mother is 95 years old in Philadelphia and she's a nice devotee. And when I go there, I should invite her to come to Vrindavan.
I should invite her
to come to Vrindavan and tell her that we can take care of her medically in Vrindavan. So, I mean, some of the devotees' parents, although at first they might have been a little inimical, but they're gradually coming to appreciate Krishna consciousness. And as their children mature in Krishna consciousness, we're also able to deal better with them. Like, just, Maharaj, can I tell them about your mother at your concert? Like, just maybe 2 weeks ago, Govinda Maharaj was in America and visited his mother there. And one evening he had a program at a big yoga place in Nashville, Tennessee, and his mother came, and she was very impressed. And afterwards, she told Maharaj, I don't know how you'll translate this, but she said, honey buns. We need a colloquial translation here, not a literal. Should I give you the mic? Should I give you the mic? You have this. Because, you know, his father and mother, they were in the music industry, and they're like the first ones to discover Elvis Presley and others, make them famous. So Maharaj's mother said, honey buns. We've always dealt with stars. We dealt with Elvis and Johnny Cash and Roy Orbison and Jerry Lee Lewis. We've always dealt with stars. But I didn't know that I have a star in my own family. She also said, honey, if I didn't have arthritis in these joints, I would have been up there dancing with the rest of them. And Maharaj, in his talk, address the audience that I am a sannyasi. I have been a monk for 20 years or more, but I have a confession to make to all of you. There's a lady in this room that I've loved for a long time. So everyone is just waiting to hear the revelation. And then he introduced his mother. Srila Naranjan Swami Maharaj Ki. Bhakti Vidyapurna Swami Maharaj Ki. Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. So, the older generation is actually, means, not us, of course, means our parents. They could actually leave their bodies in Krishna consciousness. And if they happen to want to come to Vrindavan, we do have the facility there. Because otherwise, the medical care in Vrindavan hasn't been so good. But now, at the Bhaktivedanta Hospice, you can get the best of both worlds. Get the sublime atmosphere of Vrindavan, which is the spiritual world, and expert care by devotees, you know, medically, emotionally, and spiritually. So, of course, the idea began with Mother Archavigraha, but Govinda Maharaj really took up the idea very seriously. So, I think Krishna tricked me here, because I wanted to say just a few sentences about how being close to a sadhu can enhance your experience of Krishna consciousness. But to get to those few sentences, I had to give some background. So, now this topic of death, like, some people don't like to think about it. I mean, most of us don't. I also don't, sometimes. But actually, from the spiritual point of view, death doesn't even exist. The only thing that happens is that the soul leaves one body and enters another one. But that's not such a happy thought, unless one takes birth as a devotee. Or the soul can leave the body and go back home, back to Godhead, which is a very happy thought. And it's actually been found that people who talk about death are less afraid of death and live longer. I came across a magazine that happened to have an article about, but anyway, that's not really the point. But the point is that, you know, by talking about it openly, you become more comfortable with the thought of it, and you can prepare yourself for it, and you can deal with it better. So, anyway, these bodies are just dress. Now, I think I'm ready to come to the point that I was leading up to. Eventually, it did happen that Mother Archavigraha left her body. It was in May, and a lot of the senior devotees who were spending time with her earlier had to leave because, you know, the Gaur Purnima festival was over and they had to go to their different places. But Govinda Maharaj and Burijan Prabhu and I stayed. We were determined to stay with her until the end. And she left glorious way. Govinda Maharaj's Giriraj and Gornitai were there. And there was a tape of Prabhupada chanting japa. And I was also by her bedside chanting japa. And there were two or three other devotees chanting. That was in the morning. And then in the evening, we took her body to the burning place by the Yamuna River. And usually the eldest son lights the fire. And I think people thought I would. But we were so much in it together, I thought all three of us, Govinda Maharaj, Burijan Prabhu, and I lit the fire. And afterwards, we all went into the Jamuna River to take bath, to purify ourselves. And it was evening, the sun was setting, and it was time for us to do our evening Gayatri. So we put on our gumshos and waded into the water, and we were doing our Gayatris. Now, being with someone who's leaving his or her body can also heighten your experience of Krishna consciousness. Because you enter into a very sacred realm somehow. So, you know, her departure, feeling separation, feeling ecstasy, and so many devotees and chanting the holy name. So when I was doing my Gayatri Mantra, it was like I was able to enter into the mantra, into each word of the mantra more deeply than I can remember having entered. So my eyes were closed and I was, you know, entering deeply into the mantra, and suddenly when I had maybe 1.5 lines left, that whole meditative mood broke. And I thought, what has happened? What's going wrong? And I tried to get it back, but I couldn't. And then I opened my eyes and I saw Govinda Maharaj was walking out of the water. And I realized that that experience was due to being near Govinda Maharaj in the Jamuna River while he was doing his Gayatri. And as soon as he left, that whole meditation was broken. So from that, I learned how important it is to stay close to Govinda Maharaj. So that's the more... particular lesson. The more general lesson, that by being close to more advanced devotees, what one's experience of one's spiritual practices is enhanced. So these, again, we're back to the point that Krishna is blessing all of us by the association of advanced devotees here. But it's also something that we should appreciate and not take for granted. Anyway, I just got an idea for my next talk. So I think we'll continue tomorrow. I guess since we have a few more minutes, I just made that up. Since you have a few more minutes, I'll tell one more little story. As you know, Govinda Maharaj's parents, they were like the first to put Elvis on the radio, which was the beginning of Elvis's career. And sometimes, when Maharaj's parents would go out, they would ask Elvis to come and babysit for Maharaj. So as a little boy, Elvis was his babysitter and they would play together. And once, Elvis took Maharaj to the county fair, the state fair, And there was a game where there were, I guess, balloons?
Throwing balls, throwing baseballs at milk bottles.
Oh, milk bottles. Oh, that's a Tennessee version.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So they had milk bottles, and if you paid a certain amount of money, they'd give you these baseballs, and you'd throw the baseballs at the milk bottles, and if you hit the milk bottles, you would win a prize. So Elvis, he paid the money and took the baseballs and was hitting the milk bottles, and he won a prize. And he wanted to get something nice to give to Maharaj. So he got a teddy bear, which he gave to His Holiness Bhakti Brinda. Give him the mic.
The unique point was this. He threw the baseball and he hit the milk bottles. So he asked what I wanted. That's a teddy bear. So the guy had like this little teddy bear.
Yeah,
and then he had one of these big teddy bears. So the guy gave Elvis the little teddy bear. And he said, "No, I want the big teddy bear." And the guy said, "Well, you can't have the big teddy bear." He said, "No, I want the big teddy bear." The guy said, "You can't have it." So then Elvis grabbed the guy. And he took the big teddy bear from him. Unfortunately, I don't have it. Because if I did, I could sell it and I could build, you know, a big temple in every country or something like that.
So, later.
Oh my God.
No, I'm not going to talk any more about Elvis. There is more. But no, I'll
looking now.
Yeah, just tell a little. No. How Elvis made spiritual advancement by Govinda Maharaj's presence in his life. Yeah, for a while Elvis wasn't performing, and then after some time he reemerged and began to do live performances again. So at the first performance, Maharaj's father was there, and afterwards Elvis greeted him because his father was the one who gave him the start. And he asked Maharaj's father about Maharaj. What was Maharaj doing? And his father said, "He's become a Hare Krishna devotee." And Elvis said, "Oh, he's become a Hare Krishna devotee. That's nice." So Elvis got 2 credits. He chanted the holy name. And he appreciated a devotee. So that was just leading up to what I wanted to say. What I wanted to say is that years later, when Maharaj was preaching, a new person came forward to join Krishna consciousness. And after he heard about Maharaj's history with Elvis, he said, "I cannot believe it. I am meeting a person who knew the 2 greatest people of the century, Elvis Presley and Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada." Well, I would say that's a compliment to Elvis.
Yep.
But last night, during the wonderful kirtan, I thought of what that person had said, that Maharaj has, you know, some musical ability, which might have been encouraged by his association with Elvis and other stars, but he was using it to as a medium for presenting the holy names, which he got from Srila Prabhupada. So that musical background has found perfection in the glorification of the holy name by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. So, Hare Krishna.